Hello, everyone. This is Eugene Starks, NAHU president. Welcome to The Jump Off, where we take a big leap into everything leadership and NAHU.
Well, hi again, everybody. Welcome back to the Jump Off President's Podcast. And I'm Emma Fox, as per usual, the Chair of Leadership Development, at least for a couple more months. I'm also an NAHU member, and I'm thrilled to be hosting again our President, Eugene Starks, and special guest this week, Michelle Natardi. Eugene, any introductions?
Introductions. Well, I think this podcast episode in particular is going to be a big introduction because you and I know Michelle's really new to NAHU and relatively new to the business. Michelle, why don't you give us a little bit of background on, you know, how you stumbled into this business and how you stumbled into NAHU? I'm not talking about late in the night when we hung out at the bar at Capital Conference and not that kind of stumbling. So welcome, Michelle.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here. Yeah, so my background, so I can give you a little bit about my personal background and how it kind of transitioned into employee benefits. So I'm originally from Minnesota and I love traveling. And part of my traveling involved going out and checking out West. I fell in love with the mountains, with all of the hiking trails out here. So I had to somehow get myself from Minnesota to Washington State after I graduated college. So I found myself over in Washington and I was looking for a career that something that I could, you know, meet new people every day with because I'm very extroverted. I wanted something that would have a lot of career development opportunities. I wanted something that I could learn every day with. A career that would make me a lot of money in the long run and something that was ethical. So I ran across a health insurance opportunity on Indeed.com actually. And that's how I got connected with the employee benefits world. My first job, I was doing voluntary benefits for businesses. And it was actually a really hard and rough start because I was in a completely new state. I didn't know anyone in Washington except one person that, you know, I met in Minnesota and wasn't particularly developed in business all the way. I taught snowboarding. I worked in restaurants. I worked at Victoria's Secret for a little bit. So I kind of had my people skills, but I didn't know much about businesses. I didn't have any connections. And so yeah, it was really rough start, especially when, you know, the kind of job that I had was prospecting. So I was making cold calls. I was knocking on businesses. But also, I guess, on the brighter side of things, it really helped me learn the health insurance industry, probably as fast as I possibly could.
Yeah, there's nothing like, as always say, you know, wading into the deep end. And my start was a lot older than you, but I'd worked for a carrier and decided to open my own business doing employee benefits consulting. And the business piece is what you really don't know. I did have the advantage of understanding how health plans operated, and I thought that was kind of enough, but it wasn't. You find out the things about developing a pipeline and prospecting and you know, nobody likes to do cold calls, but there's even a logic behind that and systems and, you know, so, you know, I can appreciate what you're saying. And so kudos to you because it was kind of not a smooth start. You didn't start with a carrier starting a big agency where they help feed you and carry you along the way. You were just in there getting a bloody nose a lot, I imagine.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, so you survived that first initial foray into it. It sounds like, you know, like a lot of us, wasn't that smoothly. Where did something click? Where did you think, okay, I can do this?
Yeah. So what I was doing wasn't very sustaining. That was in Eastern Washington. So Spokane, Coeur d'Alene area was my territory. And I was just about ready to just move back home. And my mom actually really encouraged me to apply for jobs in Seattle. She was like, hey, you have a college degree. You're very passionate, and someone is going to want to hire you even though you have 5 months of experience. And someone's going to want to hire you and give you a salary, because what I was currently doing was just commission. And it's kind of hard when you don't have a base salary to get started, especially
when you're
entering the business. Exactly. So I ended up applying to places in Seattle, and I drove 5 hours to go to an interview at a brokerage. And you can imagine, so they just lost one of their producers, and open enrollment was just around the corner. It was like October, and open enrollment started November 1st for most of their groups and their individuals. And so they were really desperate to find someone. And I just happened to pop in at the exact right time. I had an in-person interview, and they asked me, when can you start? And I said, tomorrow morning. And so that's
always a good time to start, isn't it?
Yeah. So I'm so grateful for that family-owned boutique agency that really helped me grow and develop all of the skills, most of the skills that I have today. I was working with individuals for health insurance. I was working with small businesses. I was writing life insurance. I was bringing in new business. I was managing the accounts. I was kind of a jack of all trades. And that really is what transitioned me into wanting to be more specialized and solely working on new business and working with larger groups. So that's kind of how I landed where I am today, where I get to travel across the Pacific Northwest and create relationships. And now I partner with brokers, which is great because I was a broker for about 3.5 years or so.
Yeah. So, you know, I love this story, and so many of the people that Emma and I have spoken with on the podcast, they're involved with NHE leadership. So most of them been in the business a long time. So I love you sharing that. And I hope we get a lot of young ears and new people listening that tune into this podcast, because I know your story's not unlike everybody else's. I mean, it's hard. Now, one of the things I know from talking to you is you were really very intentional about getting into the employee benefits business. You may not have grown up dreaming about it like I did, maybe I didn't, but you were intentional. And based on your first few hard knocks, you had to remain intentional. What was the biggest barrier? Was it the lack of experience? Was it new to the area? What was it that, you know, made it hard? What would you tell somebody starting out like you to do that helped you through?
Absolutely. So what I would tell people to do is to go to networking events and introduce yourself to as many people as you can. This business is very relationship-based. So any person who knows someone else might be able to give you an opportunity somewhere. Maybe you'll be able to help someone introduce people to their business. So a lot of networking is kind of what has brought me to be successful. I would also recommend to learn how to play golf.
Michelle, don't encourage people. We have so much golfing in this industry already.
Just because I know that a lot of business is done out on the golf course. And that has been actually probably a lot of missed opportunities for me, because I didn't grow up playing golf.
I didn't either. And I love the game, and it's still complex, perplexing, frustrating, all of the above, much like our business, right? So when you think you got it figured out, something changes, or you don't have it figured out. You know, it's a continual process of learning. But Michelle, what I know, and this is a podcast, we're not a video podcast, so they can't tell. So you're a very young person, female, and your skin's slightly darker than mine. We've really tried to be focused this year with NAHU that we're very intentional about being inclusive. And I really met you when you were at Capital Conference, and you stood up and you really asked a penetrating question, and you made the point that I look around and I don't see a lot of people like me. And I mean, that just cuts across so many identities, if you will, because you're young enough to be my daughter, not quite my granddaughter, but you're young enough to be. So a lot of people look around and you know, so you see a lot of older people. What were the barriers getting into the business from your unique cultural background? Was that a big stumbling block?
Yeah, so I think a lot of it had to do with my confidence, because I would go to these insurance forums, like conferences, and, you know, most of the attendees were middle-aged white men. And I was always the youngest person in the room. And I would maybe see one other person of color there. So it was harder to envision myself stepping into a leadership position when I don't see executive leaders who are like, there's, you know, there's a lot more women these days, which is wonderful, but, you know, people of color, I don't really see that much. And then another obstacle that I've had going into business meetings is that I talk to decision makers. So I talk to presidents, CFOs, HR directors. I talk to the C-suite individuals of companies because I'm the one, you know, bringing in clients for my business. And that was really hard for me to gain my confidence to have a seat at the table because I guess I just didn't necessarily believe in myself because I haven't really seen it done. And that was a lot that I had to just internally, I guess,
process
deal with and just process,
kind of process and see how you fit into that. I love the way you say that. And it's hard for me to think this way. You know, I've worked very hard to get to this point in my career. And I mean, professionally with NAHU, all these things. And, you know, people see me and say, well, how did you become president of NAHU? And I'm like, well, it had to be intentional. You know, I didn't just wake up one day as president of NAHU. And, you know, you talked about it before, but I guess one of the real takeaways, and I remember you sharing that when we were talking in DC, is it's important to see people like you, to see yourself in that role, to see what the future looks like for you. And I like to think of myself, and we were talking before we got on the podcast, that everybody I know in NAHU are people who care deeply about other people. But sometimes just because I always say we don't have a shelf to put that on, we don't have that frame of reference to understand what you're seeing when you look into the room, which are not necessarily a bunch of haters and people that don't want to see you succeed. But it's also nobody that looks like you or sounds like you or, you know, that really is your role model in that. Would that be fair assessment?
So when you say not a lot of people that look like me, I guess, you know, we're all individual humans and we all are unique and we all look different. But like there are not a lot of other people of color or there's not a lot of other brown people. Yes, I would agree. People who sound like me, I would say I wouldn't necessarily agree with that just because I grew up in a very white neighborhood, very white school, and half of my family is white. I guess that's the culture that I grew up in. And so I know that I, you know, and I fit in those kind of social circles.
Yeah, you were clearly articulate when you stood up and spoke at Capitol Conference. And I, you know, I guess maybe I think of that being from the South, because when I would get out of the South, I had to overcome the anomaly of my accent to be taken seriously. So, you know, rather than being something that was just funny, cute, or entertaining, I had to overcome that for people to say, okay, there's thought, there's substance. It's not just caricature of what it's like to be from the South.
Right. And we as a society shouldn't necessarily define someone as articulate because of the vernaculars that they use or because of where they grew up. I think that everyone should be able to bring their authentic selves to work. And, you know, maybe that wasn't my particular experience because of, you know, I grew up in a suburban neighborhood and I do have sides of privilege that I grew up with. I do have privileges that other people might not have. I still think that everyone should be able to not code switch just because they are in a particular setting. You know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I do. And hopefully everybody else gets. And there was something we were talking about earlier as we were, you know, preparing for the podcast, and that you're right. You know, this diversity is much more than just a skin color or a vernacular or an age. And I think that was something you and Emma had a chance to talk about on Coffee Break a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. So I'd like to come back around to that. So we did one of our coffee breaks and we had Michelle and another guest speaker, Ivan Hall, who's actually spoken at the leadership forum, the virtual one that we did during COVID. And one of the things that we talked about was that DEI really means a lot more than color. It means that we have to make sure that we're creating space for people with neurodiversities, for example, or other conditions, illnesses, or otherwise barriers to jobs. And one of those things came up because we were talking about what does DEI really mean? We asked our audience that. So Michelle, you gave some really good insight into this, and you also gave some really good statistics about how a functioning DEI policy or process in an organization can be really beneficial. So let's talk about that a little, because a lot of people who are listening to this are probably business owners.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to add on to the diversity piece, I mean, like you were saying, it's not necessarily about race. Of course, race is a huge part of it, but there's also gender, there's religion, there's body ablement, sexuality, and people with learning disabilities. So diversity is a huge bucket of things that might not even be apparent just by looking at someone. And I'm so grateful for Ivan to share these stats with us. Ivan was in the coffee break with us last week, and we had a great time talking about DE&I there. But he sent me that companies with more diverse teams have a higher probability of having higher returns on sales and making a smoother transition into new markets. I'll tell the story again. So I've been talking to a lot of, you know, insurance brokers, and some of their clients are asking, what are you doing as a company for your DE&I initiatives? Or, hey, I noticed that you don't have any people of color on your team. I'm not going to do business with you. Approach me next time you have a more diverse team and maybe I'll consider it. So the market is changing and it'll do nothing but help your business, honestly. Another one is experiencing growth in existing markets, like we kind of touched on, having a higher return of innovations made by the company, and lastly, attracting high potential Gen Z talent.
I love that. I absolutely agree with all of that. And Eugene, we've been talking a little bit lately about, you know, how Vanguard has evolved over time, you know, in NEHU. If you're not familiar, Michelle, Vanguard is a council that initially started out for younger agents, and then it's evolved certainly over the years. But I think NEHU has always had a vision to be a very inclusive association. But with that in mind, Eugene especially has always been looking for opportunities to do better or to expand, you know, some of the things we have in place. And one thing I loved hearing Eugene say, and I forget where you said this, Eugene, but you said DE&I can't be a policy. It has to be a part of our culture. So how can we start implementing at the association level? I mean, maybe that question is for both of you, really.
I appreciate you saying that. And how do we implement that? I think it begins with the conversations we're having. I'll tell you, I've been doing this a long time, meaning in business, everything. Having, quote, DEI conversations, I enter those, if you will, with some trepidation because am I going to say or do the wrong thing? But honestly, when I, you know, started dating my wife, I entered that with trepidation. I might say or do the wrong thing. There was a lack of understanding. You know, I think if we're all intentional about seeking to create understanding, you know, there's an old adage that says, seek first to understand and then to be understood. So I think, Emma, if we continue to, you know, try to create in our culture and our dialogue and encourage that as we meet people, it's not letting them know who we are. It's really us understanding who they are. And that will bring, I always say, you know, DEI really, it's a misnomer. I think it begins with inclusion. You open up the tent and you try to include. And then as you include others, you create that diversity.
Absolutely. I agree with all of that. And I think that education is a huge piece of it. Just understanding why DE&I is important will kind of open the lens of those who are not necessarily thinking about it or are not aware of it. And just to add on what Eugene said, to include folks and to understand them, that includes respecting everyone who comes into the association or your organization. And having different opinions on things is great. That's how you learn. And it's totally fine to not agree with everyone that you talk to. That's the joy of us all being different. So I think that just having a baseline of respect for everyone around, that's a really great way to start. But if you want to start implementing more things, well, then you could put together a strategic plan for your association. Pick maybe two initiatives that you want to work on. Two initiatives that I'm working on with a DE&I committee that I chair is retaining diverse team members and attracting diverse team members. So putting in a mentorship program is a really great way to retain folks who come into your organization so that they have different layers of leaders that are there to support them within their journey.
I love you sharing that. And, you know, people who don't get to visit DC and visit our corporate office, I mean, we actually have a very diverse corporate office, very culturally diverse, different nationalities, face, those kind of things. So you know, maybe that seems kind of easy. I've always said of DC, it's a melting pot, but that's what I would love to see us continue to create. And I love this business because I see this business continue to invite in people with more diverse backgrounds. And as we've done that, I think the strength of our profession has grown.
I would just like to add that I felt so welcomed when I went to CapCon for the first time. I just joined NAHU this year. And like we were saying at the beginning, I walked into the lobby and it was greeted with hugs. And the entire time, everyone was just like, what can I do to help you succeed? Let me know if you want me to introduce you to anyone. And it was just such a wonderful environment. So I highly recommend anyone who is in the health insurance industry to at least check out one of the power hours that's hosted or to go to one of the conferences that are hosted within the US. Such a great place.
I love you saying that. I don't know, Emma D, I see you smile. I don't know if you have anything to add to that.
I was just going to say, I'm so glad you had that experience. I had that experience too as a first timer. The one thing I wanted to touch on was two things. One, who do we give a shout out to for bringing you into the NAHU family? And how is it that you ended up in DC like the same month that you joined? A lot of us don't make it to DC for a couple of years. That's pretty ambitious.
Yes. So Keith Wallace was the one who suggested that I go to DC. He is the president for Washington State, I believe. So give kudos to him.
Yes.
my first NAHU event was in Alaska. So I think that's what really warmed me up to the idea. My company sent me up there, I think of June of last year, and I met Dana, who was the previous past president, I believe, of NAHU on the national level. And so he actually mentioned DE&I in his keynote. So I really appreciated that. So Alaska and my company warmed me up to NAHU, but Keith was the one who suggested that I go to DC and who got me to become a member.
See, now, Emma, that just points out how important the immediate past president is to health underwriters. Dane made that trip to Alaska. Yeah. But Dane is, he's one of the members of the board, NAHU member, that's really helped open up and create a more receptive culture across the association. So he's a friend and a good leader. I'm glad to see that you were able to engage with him from where I am all the way up in Alaska. It's like, you know, I only go, I don't know, once every 5 years, it's so far away.
I know.
But it does point up the importance of wherever we go, whether it's at the national event or at a state or a local event, how we always need to be looking for the people, particularly who are new to the association, and make sure that we're inviting and receptive and encouraging.
Yeah. And those folks up in Alaska are a great team. I've attended quite a few Alaska Association meetings. They have an annual expo up there that it's always an excellent time and full of education. So I'm glad you got to meet them. And as always, thanks to Keith Wallace. I feel like maybe like 50% of our membership came from Keith Wallace one way or the other.
It's starting to seem that way.
Yeah. Well, I just like to finish up with, first of all, thanking you, Michelle, for tackling a topic that can seem near and dear to our hearts. And you and I have talked about I have a personal relationship with DEI. I know that it's something that I want to implement in my place of work at my company, and I want to see the association do more of. So kudos to you and Eugene. But let's finish it out here, Eugene. Would you like to give Michelle our little last question?
Well, yeah. So Michelle, tell me this. Tell me something good that's going on with Michelle now.
Ooh, something good that's going on. Wow. So as I mentioned, I moved out west for the mountains. I'm a huge backpacker, hiker. I'm getting into mountaineering, and I'm a volunteer leader with a nonprofit organization as well. But I recently got the pleasure of being a character on a documentary that highlights Black Indigenous women of color outdoors. And they recently released the film a couple of months ago, and there's online screenings and in-person meetings going on before they release it to the public. So if anyone wants to hop in one of those, I'm sure there's an opportunity. It's called Expedition Reclamation. The world premiere was in Denver a couple of months ago at this festival called No Man's Land Film Festival. And we won Best of Festival Award. And it was just so incredible to be there in person, to be in the room and hear and see everyone's reactions, because the film highlights and amplifies our voices and our journeys in like reclaiming the outdoors and redefines the word outdoorsy. Like, you don't have to be a complete badass to go hiking. Like, you can just go and play your guitar, or just go hang out in a hammock, or hang out with your dog to be in the outdoors. Or you could be like me and go after somebody in mountains too. But you know, there's a huge variety of ways. And I think that like the film is so important because we don't see that representation in the outdoors. And this is just a way that I'm excited for younger women of color or whoever it may be to watch this film and get inspired and say like, I can do that too.
Yeah, I love that. And I grew up doing construction. I grew up living outside, fishing, sailing, those kind of things where I grew up on the water. You know, we didn't hunt so much, but I found myself, you know, getting caught up in career and family and all this kind of stuff. And I remember making a decision to be very intentional to get back into, you know, sailing and fishing and hunting and those kinds of things. I love you sharing that. And I think that's a great message for everyone. Is the great outdoors is called the great outdoors for a reason. I think that's amazing. That's about the coolest something good that's been shared on the podcast all year, Emma.
It really is. Yeah. I don't think I could top that either.
Yeah, exactly. So we thank you again, Michelle, for being a part of this conversation. We thank you for being a part of Health Underwriters. We're looking forward to seeing you everywhere we go promoting Health Underwriters, and know you're going to be there and be a part of our leadership. So we're excited for that. And Emma, thank you as always for all your service and really helping to put this podcast together every couple of weeks when we record it. You've been a vital part of helping us share the message of NAHE. So thank you both for your time today. Look forward to seeing y'all outdoors.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.